Attorney?
Yes.
You are on the record.
Thank you, Liz. Good morning, everybody. 11:35, and we're getting SCOTUS delivered to us. Welcome to the ADA board meeting for September 24th. Off the record here, do we Fred and Russell, are you on? Okay. Can you turn them up a little bit, please? All right. Ben, would you go ahead and call the board? Roll call the board, please.
Mr. Wilkin.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Faraday.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
He just stepped out of the room. Be back in 2 seconds.
Those are brothers down there.
Mr. Bruce.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public, please?
As I point to you in the room, can you please state your name and your organization? Start here at the table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Back there in the corner.
Good morning. Ethan Tyler, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development.
Howard Bailey, Hollywood News.
Jeff Van Juan, Ada.
Nick Shmoniak, Ada.
Bob Sheffield, Ada.
Scott Shiller, Alaska, Wisconsin.
Harold Hines, Alaska.
Karsten Rodwick, Ada.
Sunny Morrison, Accusac.
Who's that corner?
Tim Gallagher, ECR Engineering.
Paula Grammer, Alaska, General Commerce.
Sue Wolf, Northern Bay.
Amy Sinder, Governor Elvin.
Fiona Hackleman, Ada.
Tyson Gallagher, Officer of Sunny Dale.
I'm there, Sunny Ada.
Michael Ann, Ada. Jeff Leonard, Ada. Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group. Barry Jude, Department of Law.
Ms. Anderson, Ada.
Gene Carrio, Black Community Board.
Spring Kempinen, Ada. Do we have public on the phone?
Yes, Keith Ann, Inspector Energy.
Any other public?
Yes, my name is Pamela Troop. I'm in survey, so I'm a member of the public.
Any other public?
Thank you, Clay. All right, next is our agenda approval. John has one that suggested addition to it. John, yes. Would you, under executive session?
Yes, Chair. I'd like to request the addition of one item to the agenda for executive session related to pension obligations, GASB 68, and ADA's financial reporting.
Are there any objections? Hearing none. Thanks to any comments on the agenda? Any changes for the agenda?
Move to approve as amended.
Second.
Discussion none. The agenda is approved. We're up to public comments. Please limit anybody that comes to speak 3 minutes to your conversation. I will first ask anybody online. Is anybody online who would like to make a public comment? Anybody online? Hearing none, anybody in the room wishing to make a public comment in the boardroom? Seeing and hearing none, I will close public comments. Our next item on the agenda is our prior minute from August 6, 2015.
Move to approve.
I second.
Any discussion, clarifications, changes for the minutes? Any objections to adopting minutes? Minutes are adopted. And then we're up to new business now, number 7. First up is our loan resolution number L15-06. And John, would you go ahead and...
Item 7A, loan resolution L15-06, regards the purchase by the authority of a participation of a loan to Westall LLC. This time I'll ask Chris Anderson to present.
We do have a request from Northwind Bank to participate on a 90-10 basis, and the borrowing entity is Westall LLC.
Mr. Chairman, we're struggling to hear Chris.
Is he down there? Is that one? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. As I said, North Rim Bank has a request into ADA to do a 90-10 participation on Westall LLC. The gross loan amount is $6,997,500, and we are being requested to participate at 90% in the amount of $6,297,750. Our term would be 25 years. North Rim's term would be 10 years. There are several guarantors. Marcy Pfeffer Revocable Trust, Marcy Pfeffer Alaska Trust, Pfeffer Augustine Grantor Retained Annuity Trust, Gerald E. Misa Revocable Trust, and what is not a part of this document, but they will be guarantors, are both Mark Pfeffer and Gerald Misa personally, as well as Muldoon Community Improvement LLC, which is the LLC for the land ownership. The use of the proceeds will be long-term financing for a retail center at the Bar in Muldoon, Creekside Subdivision, new subdivision development going in. The retail building is 21,000 plus square feet, and it will be fully leased to three tenants. We'll have BurgerFi, Krispy Kreme, and Body Renew. They're all national tenants. There's Krispy Kreme in Alaska for Krispy Kreme. And the job creation on this project will be 20 construction jobs created. 90 permanent jobs will be a result of the project itself. And the management of the project will be through the borrowing entity. The members of Mark Pfeffer and Gerald Meester, they're well-known developers. Both of them are in the state of Alaska. The collateral, we will be taking a first deed of trust on the property. It's pretty simple. And it's on track 6, Alaska Village Subdivision, directly across from Fred Meyer, the bar, in that area. The property has been appraised by Greg Wing at complete value of $1,310,000, which gives us a 75% loan to value. Somebody going along?
They need to mute.
Can you guys please mute your phone at your end and just listen? Thank you.
It is a 75% loan to value, and this write-up indicates that the debt service coverage is 1.34 to 1. However, our interest rates did recently change in a downward direction, and so with the new interest rate, the debt service coverage would actually be 1.40 to 1. So it's an improved prospective debt service coverage. We'll require assignment of leases, and the loan is subject to the certification of value by the appraiser upon completion of the project. We do have related debt with Mr. Pfeffer and Mr. Meester in the amount, cumulative amount of $9,475,060. I believe that incorporates three loans. We did have four, one of which is paid off. There is currently no environmental issues that are known, and in listing the strengths, what we deemed as strengths, it is new construction. You do have very experienced management. It's a very good location. You do have long-term leases, and the fact that the project is fully leased, it's not speculative. And the borrowers, both borrowers have financial strength. They're very strong financially. And under weaknesses, we just saw no extraordinary risks involved in this credit over and above the fact that, you know, there is general risk in real estate development. In portfolio diversification, as of the June 30 numbers, we have 22.37% of the total statewide portfolio in the retail industry, and that increased to 23.78%. And in the Anchorage region, we were at 22.53%. and percent, and that would increase to 25.09. And the staff does recommend for approval, and I would be open to questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, Ted? I just, in the credit information that was provided, it says that the construction loan provided by North Rim will be paid off with this loan program. And this is, Chris, I apologize, I just want to make sure I understand, but it also shows on the first page of the memo from John that North Rim has got $700,000 loaned for 10 years. So are both things true?
The construction loan will be paid off by this loan, and the close to $799,750 is North Rim's participating portion in the term loan. So they
okay, and so that makes sense to me. So then following on that, though, North Rim's exposure to this loan is limited to 10 years and 10%. So why are we taking a longer-term risk than they're willing to?
Well, the 25 years on the loan participation program is actually kind of our niche in the market. It's not a good marriage of sources and uses of funds for banks to lock into interest rates on a long-term basis for 25 years. For commercial banks, 10 years is actually considered fairly long-term. So what happens is, you know, first of all, North Rim will still service the debt for the duration. So there's a servicing fee involved. And when their portion is paid off, the payments remain the same, typically, and the full payment comes to us, which pays down our loan more quickly. So does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Brett. Chris, I have a question. So this thing appraised out at, if I take the appraisal value divided by the square foot, at $441 a square foot,
mm-hmm.
Is that the trend in Anchorage now? And it seems fairly high to me for an appraisal for what I call retail.
I think that I go back to cap rates. You know, cap rates for income property like this usually range in the 7.5 to 8.5, like it says here, 8.6% range. And as your cap rate increases, you know, your value increases with the inverse relationship. So the appraiser, in this particular instance, because of the location and because of the fact that it's fully leased, gravitated towards the low end of the scale. So he capped that income at 7.5%, which commensurately increased the value.
Your appraisal doesn't say what kind of appraisal how he's appraising it. It's a number. It doesn't, whether it's an income approach, replacement approach, or light sales.
Yeah. It's emphasized. The income approach is emphasized. Went through all three approaches, you know, to try to compare and come to a number that makes sense. But you, in this particular instance, it's new construction. The repayment comes from the income side of it. So the income approach is emphasized.
So is the $9.3 million, is that real dollars that are in the system that they put in? Can you tell us that? Or is it an appraised number and it's a construction, 100% construction loan paid for, and so this is...
The borrower is putting in $2.5 million in either...
Has he already put it in?
That is part... do you have a credit presentation?
I have this.
Andy? Anyway, on page 5, it indicates the breakout of what Northrim is, what ADA is, and what the borrower is.
But is that, are those real dollars, or is that equity based on the appraisal?
I think, well, you know, they want to land, too.
I understand that.
Yeah, they're developing from land. So there's probably some percentage of that, but in equity.
So the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's you know, as we have a flat economy, I think it's important that we understand how the appraisers are doing the work and what methodology they're using to come up with that number. And so when I just see a line item that says, you know, 9.3, that doesn't really tell me anything.
Well,
and then when I see it, when, you know, they're putting X amount of dollars in, I don't mean to pick on this particular loan, but mm-hmm. but I really think it's prudent for us to understand what and it helps with the market, the existing marketplace, so we can understand the trends that are going on. I mean, that's
generally speaking. I'll respond on a general basis. Generally speaking, on these kind of properties, the income approach is always emphasized. You counterbalance your analysis with the cost and with the market. But how does the property really sell in the open marketplace? It sells by the income approach. What kind of income you can, cash flow it can demand. So, generally speaking, it always is emphasized in the income approach. But we always read the appraisal.
I think I'd like to see both the three numbers. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, you have that in the code of business. It does go through the analysis on page 3 and on page 4. And the cost approach was 9.5, 9,550. The sales approach was in a range of 9.1 to 9.4. And then your income approach.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're actually in a fairly tight
range. And do they have comps?
Oh, yeah, within the appraisal range.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up.
Go ahead, Fred.
Chris, under strengths and weaknesses, you noted no extraordinary risk, but just talking about ordinary risk, I guess what I'm would just like a brief discussion from your perspective. So in terms of our portfolio, we're going to be retail and Anchorage at 25%, and the financial pressures that are on the state and its leading oil industry are such that I'm concerned with the risk we're exposed to vacant strip malls in a downturn. So could you just speak to that briefly?
Yes, the appraiser actually went through a fair amount of analysis in regards to the general marketplace, and then actually Northrim and myself, we did talk about that as well. Talked to realtors involved in the marketplace, got additional market information, getting comfortable with the vacancy factors for this kind of project in Anchorage, and the general vacancy is in the 5-6% range, which generally speaking is a very healthy market in retail, or actually in any income property. But we were comfortable with the vacancy rate, we were comfortable with the tenants, and just in the portfolio itself, I know there's some general economic concern, but we've seen no uptick in people struggling and the workout and delinquencies. We just have not seen that as of yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. So Chris, this has been built?
Pardon me?
Is this building been built?
Yes.
Okay, so
it's under construction.
It's under construction now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious so they start the construction without the term loan being in place?
Sometimes. Not always. Sometimes. I don't think they'll have difficulty getting it financed, so yeah, it's up to the developer.
I assume that the sponsoring bank doesn't have a problem. If for some ungodly reason that this didn't go through, there would be alternate methods, and they're comfortable with that.
Sue, would you like to speak to that?
I can speak to that. The bank of Sue.
No, this is Sue Wolf with Northrim.
I'm Sue Wolf with Northrim. I'm the loan officer on this transaction. The bank of Sue is the in-house term loan under a swap contract. In the event that the aid of financing did not come in.
Okay. Any further questions from board members?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move resolution L15-06.
A second.
All right. Frank, the motion is before us. I assume there's no more discussion, so.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Yes, Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Yes, Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. So on the next one, what I'm going to we'll bring up resolution G15-18 regulations amendments for bonds and commercial development finance loans and sustainable energy supply. But what I'd like to do is like to put it on the floor, so to speak, first and have the discussion. So if someone moves this.
Mr. Chairman, I move resolution G15-17.
Okay, you're second?
I'll second.
Thank you. John?
So regarding resolution G15-17, I have one correction to the memorandum. On the lower half of page 3, the third bullet point states the $25,000 to $50,000 limit for verbal quotes, which should actually read the $25,000 to $50,000 for written quotes. But please note that the language in the resolution itself is correct. So the third bullet, which is 3AAC 100.460B, rather than verbal, that should be written. Okay. Resolution G15-17 authorizes the adoption of amendments to AIDA's procurement regulations in order to bring the regulations up to date with statute, facilitate a smoother procurement process by allowing electronic submissions of bids and proposals, and to allow AIDA subsidiary entities to continue with their own procurement practices. At this time, I ask Tom Erickson to present.
Regarding resolution G15-17 and the memo dated today, I will give a brief overview of requested changes to AIDA's procurement regulations. The first change is the exception of subsidiaries. As you know, AIDA is in the process of completing the acquisition of Pentex, Alaskan natural gas company. AIDA staff believes it does not make sense to subject Pentex subsidiaries to the requirements of the procurement regulations. Requiring subsidiaries to go through the formal procurement process and or adding legal remedies that do not apply would likely confuse and slow down their operations and potentially add costs. Therefore, the language proposed sets out an exemption for its subsidiaries. The proposed language is not strictly limited to Pentex. Rather, the new exception is written in general terms in order to cover any similar situation AIDA might create or acquire in the future. A second change is procedural improvements. Currently, there are two existing procurement regulations that require the submission of paper bids and or proposals. These changes in the regulations are meant to facilitate bids or proposals by electronic means. The changes are recommended to improve the efficiency of the overall procurement department process in a person within the current decade. The next procedural change is to the makeup of the evaluation committee. Currently, regulations require a procurement officer to be seated on all evaluation committees. We feel that it is not necessary to have a procurement officer as a voting member on every procurement evaluation committee. Therefore, the regulations recommendation is to change will eliminate that requirement. Keep in mind, however, it's anticipated that procurement officers will always be involved in the PPCs or the procurement evaluation committees, just not as a voting member, but generally as a committee chair to help fund the meetings. The third change is added to bring the regulations up to date. The first is for the addition of the Arctic Infrastructure Program. Our procurement regulations were originally drafted when the SEPS program was just being put into place and before the Arctic Infrastructure Program was created. To correct this, the proposed changes include specific references to the Arctic Infrastructure Program, where the SEPS is now referenced in regulations, so they will mirror one another. The next change is to revise the dollar limits for the regulations for small procurements. ADA uses the same dollar limits as the Department of Administration and the Department of Transportation. Those limits for DOT and DOA were increased February of 2014. The requested changes to ADA's regulation would match those revised revisions and basically throughout the document. And then following the requirement for public notice and public comment, ADA staff posted notice of the proposed changes online, including a draft of the changes. Public comment of the proposed changes was solicited, and a public hearing was held on September 9, 2015. The results were no comments, no public comments, and no member of the public appeared at the September 9th hearing. As such, ADA management recommends approval of Resolution G15-17, adopting the proposed amendments to ADA's procurement regulations.
Thank you, Tom. Questions from the board?
Chairman, I have a question.
Crystal?
So what was the reason for eliminating a procurement specialist and allowing three designated ADA employees to serve on a procurement evaluation committee? What was the reason for that?
Well, the reason is that we required three ADA employees. One of them had to be a procurement officer. We determined that a procurement officer, while is skilled in the procurement, may not be the best person to be involved in the actual value of scoring the solicitation. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, we can still be involved. We want to be one of the three, but in general, we didn't want to have that codified or chipped in stone and say it had to be a procurement officer, so we could have other people do that. That was in the best interest.
And in each of these procurement processes, we and the staff are in and not being involved.
Mm.
Yeah. Tom, on the procurement with an own operating entity, such as Pentex, for the short term, we anticipate to have that. So if you could go through a typical process, if FNG or one of their subsidiaries goes out for solicitations for a line extension or services or something that they're not going to perform in-house, how would that go about in the Fairbanks meeting? How would they do it versus how you would do it here typically through the ADA procurement code?
Well, the ADA procurement code, we would do a formal presentation where we would advertise for 21 days and we post it. Then we would either evaluate just by cost or we put a proposal team together, evaluation committee together. I think that it's pretty well subject to a lot of our procurement regulations. I think a lot of it is protests. that we would have to consider COFES, and I don't believe that the private sector held any that they wouldn't have to be subject to those types of rules. And again, I'm not exactly sure how they would be about it, but I'm sure that they would also use competitive competitions too, but I think their rules are less strict. And their award methods are well, based on cost, they really have to stick with lowest cost.
Crystal?
I see
there was a public hearing, I guess, on this proposed amendment on the 9th of September. There
yes.
was no public. So is that, that's kind of the process you go through, and how is that advertised, or who would know about that?
It's advertised. We posted in three newspapers in the area. I believe one was in Fairbanks, News Miner, the ADN, and the third was in Southeast Alaska, and I believe it was in the Sitka.
Oh. Personally, I'd like to make sure that the public is aware they have the opportunity should someone like Pindex goes out for solicitations and whether it's a hybrid scenario, and obviously you want the best value. And obviously if it's construction, we want to make sure it's the dollars protected with performance and payment bonds and bid bonds and whatnot. So I guess we'll lean to you or look to you to make sure that whatever that hybrid is, whatever they're going to do, that meets that test.
Yes. The requirement for performance or business, when it comes to form is above 100,000 or 200,000 for construction, it's automatic.
Okay. Fred, Russell, any questions from Tom? For Tom?
Ready to go.
Okay.
Call for the question.
Question's been asked. Glenn, would you
move resolution G15-17?
It's already been moved, Fred. Hell yeah.
Okay. Try to keep moving, boss.
Glenn, would you call the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is resolution G15-19. New regulations are referring to the Arctic Infrastructure Development Plan. I'll take a motion to put on the floor.
Mr. Chairman, move to approve G15-18.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. John?
Item 7C, resolution G15-18. Authorizes the adoption of amendments to ADA's bond, loan, and such regulations to conform with changes to statute made by the legislature in HB 105 this past legislative session. I'll present briefly. Three of the changes relate to increasing ADA's lending and bonding limits without prior legislative approval as follows. Increase the limit of a real property loan from $20 million to $25 million for tax-exempt loans. Increase the limit of a real property loan from $20 million to $25 million for taxable loans. Increase the limit of bonds that may be issued from $10 million to $25 million. The fourth change relates to restricting ADA from using the CEPS fund to purchase or acquire gas reserves or gas lease or become a working interest owner of a natural gas lease without prior legislative approval. Public notice was provided in accordance with 4488.085, and no public comments were received during the public comment process. Staff available to address any questions like that.
Thank you, John. Any questions from the board? Crystal.
John, can you just clarify 3 and 4 again, a little bit slower, just what the implication is there?
Okay. So on 3, there's the bond limit for an ADA obligation bond was $10 million previously, and that's been a number of years, I believe more than a decade, that it's been in place at $10 million. So the thought was to increase ADA's bonding limit to $25 million. And then on point 4, this was a limitation put on ADA let's see, with the thought that ADA shouldn't be acquiring gas reserves, gas leases, or becoming a working interest owner in a gas lease without the legislature approving it. And so this, it restricts us from using the SETS fund to purchase those kinds of interests. I would note that this doesn't have an impact on the 172 program, the private development and asset management program, where that's a requirement for collateral. So this is separate.
Thank you.
Russ,
I'll Fred, any questions?
No.
Thank you. Question? You ready for the question?
Call for the question, Chairman.
Quinn?
Mr. Wilkin?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday?
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
No.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Quinn. All right, next up is resolution G15-19.
Mr. Chairman, for the purposes of discussion, I would move G15-19.
I second.
Item 7B, resolution G15-19, readopts regulations for the authority's Arctic Infrastructure Development Program and Fund. I'll briefly present. Following the adoption of resolution G15-12, the staff of the authority discovered that public notice had not been correctly given. So staff republished notice and resolicited public comment in order to meet statutory requirements under 4488.45 and 4488.830, and those requirements have been met. There was a communication issue between one of the publishers. So it was published in two papers, but not in the third. And so revisiting, we had to make sure that the public notice is properly served.
Thank you, John. Questions? Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be voting no on this. And as I spoke to this Arctic Infrastructure Fund 2 months ago, I remain concerned about what's being set up and I think Exhibit D, if you look at Exhibit D, it only heightens my concerns. We're putting in place, or this legislation puts in place, tension not between projects in the future, but between regions of the state, and I'm concerned about that. And Exhibit D now introduces the idea that indeed we're not only talking about regions of the state competing, we're now talking about regions of the world competing for limited resources that should benefit Alaska but may benefit somewhere else. So I remain concerned. This is an ill-advised idea, and so I'll be moving on. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Mr. Chairman?
Brad?
I appreciate Mr. Wilkins' perspective and wonder if we might
trust conference room number. You entered no digits. We aren't receiving your number and treat due to a possible issue with your phone carrier.
Is that us or somebody else?
I can't tell you, Fred. It's over my pay grade.
I guess I'm going to go ahead and take the action I was going to put forward for. I move to table this resolution for further discussion amongst the board.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion to table, so I guess we'll take a vote on that. Anybody wish to speak to it first?
I appreciate Fred's concern, but I guess structurally, we're not going to make any changes, are we not? Aren't these things mandated us by the legislation?
Yes.
And so we can snip around the edges, and maybe that's what Fred wants to talk about. Is that, just so I know what the playing ground is, playing field is like.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
Okay. And I think the motion to table is going to do it.
Well, it takes precedence, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
So, Fred, is your intent to bring it up at the next meeting or table to a date certain?
tabled to the next meeting, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So, there's a motion to table. Any objections to tabling it? I guess I'll ask that. Hearing none, it's tabled. Next on the agenda is E, Resolution G15-21 regarding employee benefits, Pentex Alaska Natural Gas and its subsidiaries.
Mr. Chairman, move G15-21.
I second.
Thank you. John?
Item 7E, Resolution G15-21 regards employee benefits of and for Pentex Alaska Natural Gas Company, LLC, and its subsidiaries. This time I ask Ted Leonard to present.
Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Board. Very quickly, Resolution G15-21 is in actuality a companion resolution to G15-16. Last board meeting, the board passed G15-16, which amended the PERS agreement to not include employees of our subsidiaries of Pentex. And at that point in time, the board raised the concern that we needed to directly address also that the Pentex employees would not be involved in any of our other benefit programs. So this resolution directs management that Pentex employees will not be treated as ADA employees, which was directed in Resolution 1509, and it also states that any of ADA's employees cannot participate in any of the programs, employee benefit programs of the Pentex group.
Okay. Any questions for Ted?
I miss Ted's very quickly. It used to be like 13 times a meeting.
And it was never very quickly.
No, it was never very quickly, but we appreciate you saying
it. Any questions from Russell or Fred?
No.
Okay.
No, sir.
All right, I'll call for the question. Ben, would you pull the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Mr. Dix?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Ted. Next on the agenda is the our ADA building here. John?
Item 7F is an update from the ADA Building Committee on options for upgrading the ADA building. While the bones of the building, the structure and base are relatively sound, the guts of the building, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, electrical and plumbing systems are showing their age, need increasing care, and pose risks. At this time, I ask Carl Reich to present and call on others as needed.
Thank you, John. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
We're going to ask you to, the microphone's a ways away, so we're going to ask you to speak up.
Okay, I'll try. It's a short memo. We looked at renewing the building while vacating the building. It's a pretty expensive option. We looked at a complete renewal while occupying the building, and that's still a very expensive option. And option C is keeping the building as is and having a full audit of all the systems, coming up with a budget to take care of immediate problems, and also a 20-year scheduling budget so we can get ahead of the building and try and take care of problems before we show up Monday and find it. And staff recommended option C is a reasonable approach. And even though option C is a minimal approach, that's not to say we couldn't take on special projects to enhance conference rooms and other specific parts of the building as needed.
Okay.
I did include a comment in there that we recommend having a contingency fund approved in advance in light of various pipe breaks and electrical problems the building has experienced, so staff can effect repairs immediately and deal with the problem. We don't really have funds set aside now when things happen to the building completely unexpected and repairs need to be made immediately.
Okay, so Carl, we recently approved $173,000 for what we would call, critical items. Has it, since that last board meeting, has any more critical items come to pass or that you've become aware of?
Just things like pipe breaks. Until the building is audited, we can expect to have pipes break. Little floods. We had a light fixture smoke and set on fire in the lobby. Things like that. That
just do normal every day.
So something beyond the $173,000 budget. So that our building coordinator, Jessica here, has something to work with when things happen.
Okay. And what would you recommend that dollar amount be, Carl?
I haven't discussed a dollar amount with the executive director, but
Well, how about if I suggest $50,000?
Well, that would be a good start.
That'd be a good start? John, where would we insert that into this resolution?
To share, there wasn't a resolution for this today. There's
a couple of our national work to put it in. So we only want a few dollars in case another fixture catches on fire.
Yes, Chair. But we did prepare a resolution for the next board meeting. Or prepare an emergency resolution.
There you go.
You're just up, John.
You could orally make a motion to
adopt a resolution. Yeah, I would like to make a motion to adopt a resolution.
No.
I'm going to set a resolution for $50,000 on
contingency fund.
Broken water pipes, yes.
Just a contingency fund. Yeah, contingency fund for...
Central resolution.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Any opposition to that? Any questions for Carl on the recommendation number C? Jerry?
Well, let's see, we're in year four of this now. We've, my math, $342,000 invested in this project that we've footballed all over the place. And so now we're talking about patching something up. So let me ask a few questions. Where does the money come from if we did something else? Do we write a check?
Pretty much. We come up with a plan and a resolution and come before the board.
Okay, so it just comes out of...
Are we buying a boat?
Okay. And if we did A or B, Carl, it would be a building that would be would have a life... 20 years? 40 years?
30 or 40 years.
Okay. So, I guess where I'm headed is that I like A or B. I think it's time to put this to bed and move on. We're not going to build a new building. We bought a building next door to incorporate. I mean, I think we're at a point where it's time to write a check and get something that lasts us for the next 20 or 40 years. And I'll leave it up to you whether you want to spend $1.7 million to vacate this place or live in this place while construction. But that's really nickel dime. The question is, if we don't do it now, what we're going to do it later? We know we're going to do it. It's just a matter of these $50,000, $100,000 appropriations to fix lights, water pipes, and those things. So let's just do it. So I'd like to know what the board has to say. I hope it is going to be ready to present 20 to 40 years from now.
Okay.
So, any questions, any comments from the board any about Gary's comments or Carl's recommendations?
Mr. Chairman?
Fred?
Can I follow up, Mr. Wilkins? Just the options A and B have a $18 to $19 million price tag attached to them, correct?
That's today's estimate, yes. Plus the disruptive business when you move around. Correct, Carl?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Chairman, I'm not ready to fight at that decision.
So, my comment on that is that, to me, if it was, I think, more in the private world, what one would do would go to a developer and say, we're going to build a building here, and this is the building we want, and while you're building that building, and you're going to buy our old building, and let's negotiate the difference. And so it's seamless for the everyday business transaction, so it's you build what you need, you don't build what you don't need, you don't try to put lipstick on, what doesn't work, and then it's seamless for your everyday business. So that's another option. Mm-hmm. However, that's another building, right? And in today's economic world, the optics of that may not be very plausible. This is it's a struggle. I on one hand, I kind of agree with Gary that if you're going to do it, let's do it right. That's been my whole business model my entire life, is don't do something unless you can do it right. But at the end of the day, I understand Fred's concerns too, and what the optics could possibly mean. So it's a tough one. I would like to suggest that short of making a decision today, we also table this until the next time, so we can actually. We can visit about Fred's concerns and maybe the administration, so that we can get off the dime one way or the other.
Mr. Chairman, you didn't quite make that into a motion. I'll follow your lead, but I thought we had a motion to adopt option C as per the staff recommendation, and any kind of other discussion that's so long-term, I don't think we should table the necessary short-term maintenance, and I'm just not ready to engage in that project.
Well, short-term is 1 point some million, isn't it?
Yes. That's a straightforward.
Yeah.
For the size of the facility we have and the number of staff we have there, that's just keeping things going. And the other options are so long-term, and I'm just not convinced we're ready to tackle those yet. I don't think we can forego the short term. So I'm ready to vote on the motion as made to do option C as recommended.
Okay. Any other questions from the board?
Could I ask a point of clarification?
Go ahead.
You think there's a motion pending to approve option C? Is that right?
Right. I thought I heard it. If not, I'll be glad to make it.
There was a motion to approve $50,000 to be set aside as a fund.
Yes.
I think if you're going to approve that, you need to have a roll call vote done on that. If you're doing something different, you need another motion and then to do a roll call vote on that.
Okay, so the motion before us is the $50,000. So let's have a roll call vote on that. And this building,
Mr. Chairman, can you clarify?
Yeah, for the fund, the $50,000, so that Carl has something to fix the light fixtures that start burning up. That's first step, and that motion is made.
Contingency,
yes. That motion is made. What's before us, just so for clarification, is an update on the Ada building with a recommendation. There is no, there's nothing on the floor to vote on at this point. There's no motion. Okay.
Is there a motion for the contingency fund?
Yes. Yes. And
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. It's hard to track remotely. I'll make the excuse anyway. Is the motion for the contingency fund a modification to option C? Is that how we should enact it?
No. Gary?
May I try to help? I would withdraw my motion on the conceptual motion of $50,000 with the consent of the second, and then when that is done, offer a new motion to accept option C as presented, but amended to $1.25 million. So $1,250,000. Get us to where we want to go, Carl?
Get us in the right
direction.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So, Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
So I was going to say, under item number six, there's already miscellaneous business finishes and housing allowances. So is that, that's, is that a catch-all for you, Carl? Under that? Item 1 through 6, 1 through 5 are fairly specific.
While you're thinking, let me get the conceptual motion off the table. So I would move that the conceptual motion to approve $50,000 be removed from the table with the consent of the second.
Okay. Who's second?
All right,
thank you. Okay.
Did you get that, Ben? So we withdrew the motion.
We did.
There's no motion.
All right. So, that being said, so Carl, what, is that $50,000 in that 1.2?
No, what I had in mind for a contingency fund is a general concept that until the building is overhauled, things are going to happen on a week-by-week basis.
But right now you have $1.2 million worth of upgrades that may be a motion in front of us. You're recommending option C.
Right. That would give us enough contingency in the near term. But on an annual basis, staff would come back, and until the building has been repaired substantially, we would come back with a request for some sort of contingency funds.
Gary?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt option C on attachment D in the amount of $1.25 million.
A second.
Second.
Any further discussion? Friend, would you call the vote, please?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Faraday?
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
No more fires.
Okay,
we'll
work on it.
See you next week.
Mr. Chairman?
Fred?
Might we direct, I don't know that we need a formal resolution, but I would encourage our executive director and his staff, particularly Chris, simply to monitor the Anchorage commercial property market. I don't think this is in the next 3 months. I think it's over the period of the next couple of years to identify an appropriate alternative. I mean, there should be downward pressure on commercial real estate coming out of the ongoing fiscal situation in the state. So at some point, if they identify a viable alternative, I think the board would be willing to entertain it. So I guess it's a run it and watch it kind of thing, but I'd like them to keep an eye on what alternatives might exist, because The existing setup, as Senator Wilkin noted, is marginal.
Well, I think that's a good idea, but however, I caution that typically what would come on the market is buildings of similar condition or age. Typically, you will not get newer facilities that fit our model that we need without substantial changes to that also. So.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I hadn't given full thought to my idea because I was thinking more in the context of leasing space, and of course we own our current space, so I'll withdraw my idea.
All right. All right, next up is the Interior Energy Project update.
Sure. On 7G, update of the Interior Energy Project. Ask Bob Shepchik to present and call on others as needed.
Good morning, Bob and Nick.
Good morning. So a lot has happened since the beginning of August, since we spoke to you last. This, as you notice from the title, is more an update on the RFP process and where we are and where we are with finalists in the entire project, because that is the biggest steps and the biggest actions that have occurred and has drawn the most attention. I'm going to have Nick go through both the RFP process, the finalist summary, and a little bit on each of the finalists for you as a board. I know you've got them in writing already, and then we'll touch bases on the other components at the very end and give you a rough update of the things that have happened concurrent to this as part of that. With that, Nick, I'll let you.
Thank you, Bob. Right. And thank you, Chair. So HB 105, which was passed by the legislature last year, required AIDA to use an open and competitive solicitation process to select private entities to participate in developing the liquefaction LNG production plant capacity and affiliated infrastructure. This intent language was added as the bill was going through. It was something that AIDA supported. A fair, competitive, open process is what AIDA planned on doing to select its project partner for the IEP. But as a result of this language, AIDA decided to take the path of issuing an RFP this summer for private project partner. And the RFP was issued through AIDA's procurement department. It was not a pure procurement, but instead what we did was we utilized the existing procurement tools to create this fair competitive process. The RFP went out, we've discussed the RFP in this board meeting before. A quick review, it was asking for a base scenario of a cook-and-let LNG plant standalone, no LNG, no natural gas supply, no trucking, but was open to a wide range of alternatives. And not only was it open to them, there was no preference for the primary case versus the alternatives. And any new way to supply energy to Fairbanks and North Pole was welcome. So that included North Slope LNG plant, imported propane or LNG, as well as a small diameter pipeline. Responses received August 3rd. The responses came in. We distributed those to the evaluation committee. The evaluation committee met a few weeks after. Each showed up with their own scores. The scoring criteria were included in the RFP, were made available to the proposers ahead of time. And then it was probably, at least in my opinion, and I think the feedback I've gotten from other members of the evaluation team, the best, if not one of the best, evaluation committee meetings we've been in. We spent all day, and most of the scores were consistent with each other. Where they were not consistent, we had very constructive conversations about why there might be disagreements. Sometimes that moved us into agreement, sometimes it didn't, but we understood why people had different views on it. And at the end of the day, we ended up selecting five finalists. Those finalists were notified, I believe, September 7th, and as part of the notification to the finalists, we knew there'd be a large demand, especially in Fairbanks, but in the public, for information on who the finalists were. And we wanted to provide that information, but we didn't want to be in a position where AIDA was taking the confidential proposals, putting together public summaries, and then kind of in our view of what we were interpreting in the proposals, and then giving it to the public. So what we did is we...
Go ahead, Gary.
when you finish your thought, I just have a question about the composition of the evaluation team.
Okay. So, so in the, when we selected the five finalists, we requested that they provide a five-page summary of the proposal that would be made public upon the announcement of the finalists.
After the finalists were announced, I had a couple of phone calls about people that wanted to know who was on the committee, and I think it would be helpful for us, for the board and the folks that are watching, to just, you don't have to give them all the bios, but just if you would just march down the list of the people that helped in that process.
Not sure to answer that question, Mr. Wolfman.
No.
We can't say who's on the evaluation committee?
Not at this time. Okay. We will be able to make that available upon the selection of the finalists. So that information that will be made available eventually, but at this time, until the process is complete, we want to keep that confidential.
Okay.
Are they done, or are they part of the final selection?
They're part of the final selection.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
So,
and I know who they are. The point I was trying to make is it isn't just people from within EDA or EEA, from within the government. It's people from outside that have utility and LNG experience. It's safe, certainly safe to say that.
That's correct. And I'll feel comfortable kind of talking about the general composition. We had EDA staff. We had utility representatives. A big push from the very beginning was that we wanted utility representatives on the evaluation committee, as well as people from outside ADA utilities that have a deep understanding of the project and would be able to present a different perspective. And really, it was the case. We brought in these people from outside the utilities and outside ADA that understood the project, and they provided some very interesting insights into the proposals.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next slide, discussed most of this already. Really what this is leading to, and I'll get into more detail further, is we've received our five finalists. Right now we're in direct conversations with each of them, including bringing utilities into these conversations, and we're driving towards the best and final offer by mid-October, with the goal of having a project partner selected, recommended to the board, and then have board action on actually approving that project partner by the end of this year. So the five finalists, and they're listed here, and then I'll go through each one of them and to the level of detail that the chair wants on discussing what in general they're proposing. I put the slide together, probably made a mistake of numbering the finalists.
Go ahead, Fred.
I don't think we received this presentation, Russell and I. If it could be emailed to us, I'll get it printed.
The slide?
Yes.
This was just handed out.
I've got my board packet. I don't
see
it.
This was just handed out. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Did you get them, Fred? You have them?
No.
So
I heard somebody say send them. I don't doubt they were sent, but I can't lay my hands on them. So if they'd be sent, that'd be great.
All right.
Okay. I'll plow ahead and try to.
We'll keep up. Please proceed. Okay. But if we can get it, I'll get it printed.
Yeah. So the number in here is meaningless. If you look there in alphabetical order, that's all there is to it. The five finalists: Harvest Alaska, subsidiary of Philcorp Alaska, proposing a Kukulik project; Phoenix Clean Fuels, a North Slope LNG project; Salix, a subsidiary of Avista Corporation, is Kukulik. Spectrum, who we're familiar with, Cook Inlet and North Slope, and then Westpac Midstream, Cook Inlet, as well as Davenport LNG. I'll flip through each one of these in much more detail now. So Harvest Alaska proposed three different alternatives. If you recall, we didn't just ask for the base case, we asked for alternatives, and we allowed each proposer to submit different alternatives. And at the end of the evaluation, well, each alternative ended up being scored on its own. Instead of selecting alternatives or particular project plans, we actually selected finalists. So when the finalists moved to the next stage, to phase two, they were able to pursue all their alternatives through this stage. And then when best and final offers come, they'll submit one best and final offer from out of their list of alternatives. So Harvest proposed three alternatives. Functionally, it's all the same project if you look at it from kind of a physical standpoint, but each one is commercially different. The first alternative would be a standalone LNG plant that essentially pulls third-party natural gas through it, and then third-party trucking or rail would take it from the plant to the interior. Their second alternative was included the LNG facility as well as a natural gas feedstock. Hillcorp is a large producer of natural gas, and this proposal would have Hillcorp providing natural gas into the Harvest LNG plant, which the utilities would purchase and take custody of at the outlet plants of the plant. The third would include transportation on that, so it would be a delivered LNG product to the interior. The terms of that proposal looked a lot like the terms of what was the existing LNG supply agreement between Harvest and FNG to provide LNG to the interior at an existing 1 BCF plant. The next one, Phoenix Clean Fuels is actually a fairly interesting proposal. If you recall, the last effort with NWH produced a 6 BCF plant on the North Slope. As we went along, one thing that was accomplished in that project was an operator of the plant was identified, and members of that team, including members of TDX, which is the electric utility on the North Slope, and Orgasco, which is the natural gas utility on the North Slope, were members of that operating team under MWH. And in an effort to bring the operator on board, the operator and the operator's team was actually involved in a lot of the design and cost estimating of the LNG plant. So when they did eventually take over as operator, they would understand how the plant would work and have input into it. So this team is largely, the Phoenix team is largely composed of that team that was...
So, who's on the line?
Fred Rumpel is still here.
We're going to hang up, and we're going to call you back, Fred.
Do we need to hang up and dial back in, or do we just stay here?
You have to hang up and dial back in because we will be closing the telephone line.
Yeah, everybody has to dial back in who wants to call back in.
Are you ever going to let us eat lunch, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. That's the wrong thing, dude.
Is it going to be the same dial-in number?
Yes, we'll use the same conference code dial-in number, so we'll disconnect and reestablish. Thank you.
That's the only way I know to do it.
We could just turn them down, and if you want to talk, you can raise your hand.
Really? How did we see that? Hey, that's what the text again.
Welcome to Open Voice Audio Services. Please enter your conference room number followed by the pound or hash sign. Conference room number accepted. If you are the organizer, press the star key. Please enter your PIN followed by the pound or for a menu of available commands, press star 1. Phone will now continue.
What is that? Is that the same thing?
First dialer has all the music. Oh, okay. When somebody joins, and then they call.
Turn the lights down a little bit. Who is in? I like the name.
Yeah.
Hello?
We got back in, but the main thing is still there.
It's a system.
I don't know if it's a system or because we might have had to close it out for maybe 10, 15 minutes and open it back up to give it a chance to clear the system.
When
yes, we dialed in as the host.
Bob?
You could call them directly. You lose your public participation online, but you could just dial them from here.
Was there anybody else left? I don't think there was anybody online.
We had two people on the line.
And one of them is obviously on hold.
Yeah.
The other one's
Pamela, too.
Yeah. You may need to set up a different conference.
We had a Keith Hand and a Pamela Coop on the line.
Yeah.
So you're here?
So we know
who it is. We have Pamela.
We'll call him back. We're going to call him back. Get a number we can call him back at. Fred?
She doesn't have mine.
Fred?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
What's your number there? We'll just call you back.
465-3698.
All right, we'll just call you back.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
okay. Okay,
we're here.
All right.
Hungry, but here.
Thank you, Fred.
We're just eating cookies here.
Yeah.
You ready for me, Chair?
We're ready.
Okay,
Nick.
I'll speak fast. I'm hungry, too. So, Phoenix Clean Fuels. Largely consisted of team members that were on the operating team for MWH. So the team MWH project, after the concession agreement was terminated, they reached out to us and indicated that they would be interested in pursuing a project, and they thought they could do it at much lower cost based on what they had seen. We told them to hold off on those discussions until we started our competitive process. Our process started, and they came in through there, functionally proposing a what they believe would be a much lower cost version of the MWH plan. The next one, Salix, is a subsidiary of Avista Corporation. Avista Corporation is a very large utility corporation in the Pacific Northwest, natural gas and electric utility. They've recently purchased AELMP, which is electric utility in Juneau. They have proposed building a 6 BCF LNG tolling plant in Coquimbo. The next one, Spectrum, is familiar to us. They were a finalist in the last go-around. They have proposed two projects, one Coquimbo LNG plant and another a North Slope LNG plant. This time, we're getting indications from Spectrum is that they will likely pursue the North Slope LNG plant as their option going to the best and final offer. The West final one, Westpac. Again, Westpac is probably familiar to many of the team members. They haven't actually gone through the ADA process before, but they have been in the community discussing a Coquimbo LNG project. They proposed three different options, a standalone LNG tolling plant, and then one that includes natural gas supply. Westpac currently has what we understand to be a farming agreement with Bluecrest and the Cosmo field to finance and develop the natural gas portion of that field. If we select this option, they will develop that portion of the field and supply natural gas into the LNG plant from the Cosmo field. The third option, and a very interesting one, is they proposed importing LNG from British Columbia. It would be imported initially in ISO containers on a barge into a South Central Alaska port, hopefully with rail. If rail becomes allowed, Alaska Railroad would get permission to ship LNG on rail. If not, it would be trucked from that port into the interior. Eventually, they proposed using dedicated special-made barges that would carry the LNG in bulk.
I think the answer to that may be yes.
What was that, Fred?
We just got a lunch offer. We're going to accept.
This is a tough crowd today.
Okay, so those are the five finalists. Happy to answer any questions on the actual project proposals. Again, in public meeting, we are limited to discussing what they have said in public, primarily through their five-page summaries, which is a convenient tool for us knowing exactly what we can and can't say to the public on them. So if we go into the IP project milestones, we kind of step through the chart. We issued the RFP. August 3rd, we received the proposals, selected the finalists, August 27th. And now we are in a phase where functionally it can be understood as negotiating the best deal possible with each of the five finalists in parallel. And part of that process, a very important part of that, is not just aid in negotiating with the finalists, actually bringing the utilities in to help with those negotiations. We've already had the first round of these meetings. After the evaluation process, we had evaluation team members provide questions. They were compiled and provided to the finalists. We sat down and walked through the questions on their proposals. We weren't expecting them to have any response to that. Instead, we will just have them answer those questions in their best and final offers. Next week, we will have them in Anchorage meeting with the IEP team to review their economic and financial models to better understand the financing assumptions and rate-making assumptions that they're using in order to get to a price. Following week, we are having each of the five finalists in Fairbanks to meet with the IEP team and the utilities to provide the utilities direct interaction with the finalists. And all these series of meetings are leading to a point where we get to this best and final offer. It'll be one best and final offer in each of the proposals. And then shortly after receiving that, we envision a public meeting in Fairbanks where each of the finalists will present their best and final offer to the community. ADA will solicit feedback from the community on the five finalists that will be memorialized and included in the evaluation packet for the evaluation team when they select the final project partner. The evaluation team, like I mentioned, would meet again and review the best and final offers and project input and input from the negotiating team, including the utilities. And from there, they would make a recommendation to eight executives on who the recommended project partner is. It is envisioned that that project partner would be brought before the ADA board in the December 3rd board meeting for review, and then a potential special board meeting in mid to late December where the ADA board would be able to take action on that proposed partner.
So, Nick, what you're saying is that we will have the recommendation on the 3rd of a partner, close partner, and then, but we won't have to take action until theoretically the 17th. That'll give us time to digest everything. Is that correct?
Sure, that's correct. And it also provides you opportunities to provide feedback on the deal and project partner we bring forward. If there are provisions or commercial terms that the board has some questions about, we could be given direct feedback, work out those issues, and come to the board with those resolved on December 17th.
All right.
Yeah. So in regard to the December 3rd date, if I'm number two on the list, if I'm not selected, my proposal, what recourse or what is my next option on December 3rd when someone else is chosen as number one? Do the other four just fall away?
Fall away is probably the wrong way to put it, but the other four will no longer advance as far as recourse. Eventually, upon action by the ADA board, the scoring criteria and the evaluation process will be made public. If they wish to, protest, they will have the public comment period in the December 3rd and December 17th meeting to provide that. And they will certainly have the public forum in Fairbanks to make that case for why they should be picked.
So the community presentations are of the five presenters? The five?
Correct. The five presenting their best and final offer.
There's also an expectation between the 3rd and the 17th that the finalists, recommended finalists, present in Fairbanks. We haven't worked with the venue or a sponsor for that yet. That was in the timeline we gave you.
That would come after the 3rd?
Between the 3rd and the 17th, the recommended finalists would present themselves to the community.
The one single finalist.
The one single finalist will be presented to the board on December 3rd in an executive session.
No. Okay. It will be. Everyone will know on the 3rd.
And so then, what happens in that 2-week period?
Our experience from last time was a large recommended project with many components delivered at a board meeting and said, "Please vote on it." Was an enchilada too big to eat? And so really it gives the board 2 weeks to think, to question, to ask, to evaluate, and concurrently we'll have information made available in Fairbanks so that if the public wants to provide input on our comment, it's not squeezed into a single meeting. And so that two-week period really is reflection and questioning time for the board to ask the administration to bring you enough information that you have a comfort level with the decision you're being asked to make. Nothing more than that.
So then on December 4th, the six or seven of us are open for lobbying, whatever, to not approve what's been recommended in public on December 3rd? Is that what's going to happen those 14 days?
There's always some of that by vendors. We started this by saying there's a universe of choices. Until we come forward with recommendation of one, everybody's a good guy, and then 80% of the world thinks you've made the wrong call. You'll hear that, and to the extent that you have questions that result from that, that in your mind you need answers that we failed to answer completely, you ask them and we answer them. But we don't expect a parade of pick me before the board and public presentations as the process.
And that selection won't be public until December 3rd. Is that correct?
Well, whenever the board packet becomes public for the meeting on the 3rd is when it would.
Okay. A few days before.
Correct.
Okay, I'm okay with this. I'm just trying to figure out.
Yeah, my full expectation is we need it pretty much buttoned up Thanksgiving weekend or that following week in order to have it before you in a responsible fashion.
Okay, I'm okay with it. I just can't wonder what to expect. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So that will wrap up the discussion of finalists and I move to the final slide.
And really, I only have 15 more slides, Fred, so don't worry, I won't be long.
We did get them, so we're not going to get you.
A quick update on where we are for the other components. On the energy supply, the RFI team, given the profile of the finalists, has moved forward to initiate commercial discussions because we had proposals for tolling plants that require gas into them from Cook Inlet. We have ongoing discussions with Golden Valley to ensure that, yes, indeed, their supply contract remains open. There's been some discussion with BP as to whether or not a contract directly to the utilities that feed this tolling plant would be available as well. That's probably coming in third as a choice, but that has not been left unaddressed. You've brought that up a number of times, Mr. Wilkin. And so for the transportation portion, each of the five proposers has a different mechanism for getting there, and to some extent that would be driven by who the recommended finalist was, some truck, some rail, some FOB plant. The pilot project didn't happen in September, is now targeted in the middle of this month, but the work has happened both with the Weights and Measures guys and FNG in terms of analyzing the design and the drawings and the on paper. Yes, it works. The question is now, will it, you know, what, how will it perform when it's hauled up and down the road, and that's still in the queue. And finally, the railroad has yet to receive permission on transporting LNG by rail. As the IEP team, we've worked with them to try and help with you know, urgency messages that they can carry back east for that approval. It is a challenge to not have rail approval, so by default you have to look at trucking for all of them until that comes forward, and that's just where we are, and we're pushing on that. On distribution, you know, the construction is wrapping up in Fairbanks that you saw in June. It's really been a successful summer season for both of them. F&G got about 25 miles of pipe in through Island Homes and Aurora subdivision and some over to University West. FNG or IGU has like 73 of their 77 miles of pipe in the ground for their construction. And Ted and Mark have been leading the local control entity discussions, and really that is all moving along as well. Storage and regas, we did an immediate analysis to see what decision points need to happen for additional storage to be added. Decisions actually needed to be made, you know, the 1st of October if construction was going to happen this winter. The analysis showed, though, that really if it lagged a year based on the timing of our plant proposals, we would have sufficient capacity in the plant to swing the plant while construction was being built, so you didn't get an emergency, oh, we want to advance storage in advance of the rest of the project going together. Kirk will be leading a design charrette for both optimizing the system and optimizing storage with the utilities once the Pentex acquisition closes. The sharing is more probable and easier then, and so that will button up what happens with the 5.25 million gallon tank, what happens with the bullet tanks that would end up in the North Pole area, and how would they best mix together. Gene has been following with the conversions group. In addition to the work you'd heard about before, they're looking at essentially a PR campaign on conversions with that current AHSC program so that people can know to take advantage of that, and that will help, the rebate program will help them with future gas conversions down the road. And we have contracted with Cardinal to extend that sensitivity analysis that you saw on price differential with the changing oil prices to look at longer periods of low oil prices and the impact that would have on conversions. And so all that's all going on. And then finally, House Bill 105 required quarterly reports to the legislature. The first one is due October 1st, and that will be done and delivered to the legislature, and that will also serve as your monthly report for this next period. As
Are we scheduled before legislative committee to present that report?
The requirement of House Bill 105 is that it be submitted to the Secretary of the House and the Recorder of the Senate, whoever the two official people are that are the record keepers, and notice the legislature that it's available. And that's the requirement. There's nothing scheduled or committee hearings required. It could happen as soon as somebody gets the desire to hold a hearing or a briefing, and we'll give them one. It could happen. We've already heard discussions that, well, maybe we would want one when the session starts, and that's, you know, that we'll follow the desires of the legislative process on that one.
Okay. To your point, Commissioner Parity, if requested, ADA will provide a project briefing on the interior energy project of the legislative budget and audit committee. So that's on request.
Yep.
I just would like to keep apprised of that request, because if it comes, it will be a significant event.
And with that is our briefing on both the RFP process, the finalists, and the concurrent efforts that have happened across the last 6 weeks since we've seen it.
Okay, questions? Okay.
A couple. So will we have a test truck for this winter?
To get into that question.
The chairman would like to know if we will have a test truck to haul north to south and south to north.
Yes.
Will we have a test truck, 13,000 gallons, with a pup?
No.
When will we have it?
Well, as we heard at the last meeting by the manufacturer, that pup does not exist. That pull an LNG right now.
Okay.
And so once we know whether or not how a 13,500 gallon performs, we'll look at the economics of what a pup would take, what it would cost, and the relative benefits of that.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
When will the trailer get here, and when will it start?
It's scheduled to be here on the 19th right now, and they'll have it up there for a week or a month.
October 19th?
October 19th, it'll land in Anchorage?
Yes. And our next meeting is the 22nd, so I hope to report to you that it's hauling LNG north and south at our next meeting.
Okay. We might want to think a little bit about selling the sizzle on that, getting some press out of that.
That's not my best suit, but we have people that do that. So
really
good suggestion, sir.
The second question, any word from Washington, D.C. about getting some help with conversions through Senator Murkowski, Mr. Pawlowski, or through the EPA?
Mr. Wilkin, I was in touch with the Senator from Murkowski's staff. There was an amendment that was proposed in one of the energy bills that would expand the existing program that is available in California primarily to the state of Alaska. The suggestion that there might be access to about $5 million, but there's nothing pending that is a direct appropriation either from the Congress or from EPA to the interior for assistance with conversion. It was just looking at existing programs that might be expanded a bit that the interior may not be able to do by taking that control. But that is all that the Senator's office indicated that is pending at this time.
Are you in contact with Mike Pawlowski? Is he a point person, or is he involved in it to the point he can give us some hope or at least some direction on how to get some help with conversions?
I think either Mr. Pawlowski or Chuck Pasholte on the energy staff, they're both very aware of this and I think are looking for opportunities. In the Senator's Omnibus Energy Bill, they did look for, again, things that could be available, not specifically available just for the state and this project. They had included some language in there whereby the states or state entities can get access to DOE money that can be loaned out. We're thinking that that might actually open up a possibility to offer some conversion assistance, but that's all in pending legislation. But although the buzz nationwide on that piece of legislation has been positive, there's no guarantee that it will actually go for floor action. Mm-hmm. Nothing's been scheduled at this time. Mr. Pawlowski has recently transitioned from the Senator's Energy Committee staff to the personal office. So I think that's beneficial that him, with his knowledge of this project and knowledge of what was put into the energy package, is now in the Senator's personal office. And I think we'll, again, be mindful of watching out for opportunities.
I mean, I don't want to draw the obvious, but with oil stays the way it is, conversions are going to be a huge problem here, and very quickly, if they can help us in some way, we'll certainly take it. So $50 million could do a lot to make this project work.
So the Senator is scheduled to be in Fairbanks this Sunday, and to give a presentation tonight. I hope to catch her in a few seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further questions, Fred or Russell?
Not here.
All right. Rob and Nick, thank you for the update. That brings us to executive session.
Mr. Chair, I entertain a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
I move. Oh, you're supposed to say that. Did a good job. Okay. Now that you said that, I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, Brooks Range Petroleum, Mustang Operations Center, Bluecrest Energy Drill Rig, and the Skagway Oil Terminal and GASB 68.
I second.
That's a lot. All right.